Hello and welcome to the Atlanta Opera Podcast, The Business of Opera. The series is inspired by the programming of the piece, The Revolution of Steve Jobs at the Atlanta Opera in the spring of 2022. In preparation for the premiere of the show in Austin, Kansas City, and in Atlanta, we will have a series of interviews with business leaders, opera impresarios, artists, and strategic thinkers, as well as creative minds who will focus on two themes. Number one, the business of opera and the role of leadership in this business. And number two, the very controversial and mysterious character of Steve Jobs and the opera written about him. In this next episode, I am talking to the wonderful baritone John Moore, who's going to be singing the lead role of Steve Jobs in our upcoming production with the same name. John is a frequent performer in both Europe and the United States. He has garnered a lot of praise for his energetic performances and his wonderful baritone sound in both operatic and concert repertoire. John has already performed the role of Steve Jobs at the Seattle Opera and will be performing the role of Steve in all three upcoming productions of Steve Jobs in Austin, Kansas City, and here in Atlanta. I hope you will enjoy our conversation. John, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm well, Tomer. Thank you for inviting me.
It's exciting to be able to connect with you. So tell us a little bit about this opera. You sang it in Seattle. And how is it to sing Steve Jobs?
To my left is my iPhone. I've got my watch on my wrist. I've got my mini HomePod just over my right shoulder here. I've got my iPad to take notes. I'm talking to you on my MacBook Pro. So I am, like I like to tell people, I'm fully immersed in the religion of Apple. I believe in Apple. I trust Apple. So taking on the role of Steve Jobs after a decade of supporting and paying tithe, you know, at least 10% of my yearly income to the corporation, and certainly entrusting them with my data, with my personal information, with you know, sort of carrying in many ways the relationships that I have in business, in my personal life. Taking on the role of Steve Jobs was kind of not homage, but you come to it with a kind of respect, knowing that herein is the human being that was seeing decades ahead of the rest of us, preparing the way, you know, like he said, a bicycle gave people this sort of freedom of movement. Well, now these technologies give us this freedom. And even with our in our own art form, Tomer, I'm sure you appreciate just the value of having that forward thinking mindset, that presence of mind to look beyond our established traditions and into the future. So as I prepared, I just thought, what an opportunity to explore not only the human being of Steve Jobs, but Steve Jobs was very much in tune with received traditions that worked, and then what it took to adapt and evolve those traditions into the future. And he was one of those people that, because of meditation, was able to hone the present moment with a full perception of past and future in his mind now. And I think that's one of the reasons why he brought a lot of people on board and why we're talking about him as the subject of an opera.
Yeah, well said. Now, I can't think of many more iconic people than Steve Jobs. You know, I'm trying to think what Elvis, JFK, I don't know, Obama. Who belongs in that club, right? I mean, this is an iconic character that is a part of mythology of the 20th and 21st century. You get the phone call that you're going to sing Steve Jobs. You're going to be him. How do you prepare? How the hell do you transform John Moore into Steve Jobs?
Well, I don't want to let too much out of the bag. I'm sure I have plenty of colleagues, and certainly my wife and my father could give you a different answer. But I would, you know, I would say that the way you prepare for Steve Jobs is you go to the humanity of the person. And I think Mark Campbell serviced Steve Jobs' human being in a way that amplifies the icon. So we get to see the scared little boy. We get to see the sort of, on some level, narcissist. We get to see the unruly husband. We get to see the person that's afraid of mortality on a certain level, that is trying to defy what is natural to us all, which is the end, which is impermanence. So you have at once this, anyone that knows Buddhism, Zen Buddhism especially, knows that the whole point is to get over yourself, to transcend that which is your corporal being. And then you have this guy, you know, slamming carrot juice. I think this is scene two, where he, his wife, of course, this woman that he finally, after many decades, realizes is the one, after denying, you know, his parentage, after being adopted. He had every reason to sort of transcend, you know, he had every reason, the adopted child. And so I think when you think about, again, you know, so many people say when it boils down to in life is relationships, that's what you have to key into in any of the operas we do. If you can key into relationships, you suddenly, it's like once you do that work, you're suddenly looking in the mirror a lot. I always love telling people, I am Count Almaviva. I am Figaro. I am Onegin. I am Papageno. I am Steve Jobs. And why? Well, I'm a male in my midlife. And I think anyone with even a remote amount of self-awareness can tap into the things that are pretty cool about the man, but certainly those things that a lot of us don't want people to know. And that's our job as artists, is to amplify that on stage so that people are invited into that human as opposed to mere icon, which is troublesome. If you merely revere the icon of Steve Jobs, you miss so much of what made him possible.
And the greatest moment for me in terms of the research is this concept in Isaacson, where he talks about the RDF, about the reality distortion field, and this idea that Steve Jobs would not accept any limitations of anything that stood in the way of his ideas. And that basically changed the world, right? Because he was able to deliver unbelievable things, from the iPhone to the iPod to the iPad to completely changing iTunes and retail stores and personal computers. But at the same time, it also killed him, because this reality distortion field prevented him from accepting the reality, which was, you have a daughter, here's the DNA, and him saying, no, that's not true. Or you are sick with cancer, you're dying, Steve, as they say in the opera, and him not accepting it. So I find that to be extremely astute of Isaacson to kind of put the pulse on that, because I think there's a lot of people in the world, especially transformational leaders like Jobs, and there are others in history. Wagner is one of them, Richard Wagner, who had their own reality distortion field. And my question to you is with the opera, right? Because we are doing the opera, Steve Jobs, Mason Bates, Mark Campbell. Do you feel that the reality distortion field somehow gotten into the opera?
Yeah, I think Mason does it with adding techno. I think having the MIDI keyboard in the middle of the orchestra is this weird 21st century way of saying to the traditional opera setting, we're here and we're not leaving. There's, you know, it's almost like a pacemaker gets put into the heart, and it's like, and it does in the opera, because we need a click track. I remember when we were doing the Nicolas Paimon, our conductor, you know, really Nicolas Paimon, you know, really working with that notion that we need that click track. It's so important, and that, you know, you hear the but anyone that's been to, you know, a rave, I haven't been to a rave, I shouldn't say that, but like a club, you go into a club and there's this heartbeat just constantly reminding you that you're supposed to be having a good time, or that, you know, your good time may be ending as soon as you leave and you don't hear that anymore. That's what it feels like, because when there's a couple times it goes
right. What we call the reboot moment.
Yeah. And you suddenly realize, whoa, we've just like, and now entered into a different, and a lot of the times we're heading back into the sort of meditative Zen mindset in those, in, you know, he's breaking down in the real world, and now he's going back into this reflective sort of understanding of, you know, the duality. I mean, this is the thing, I think, I love what you talk about the reality distortion field, because man, I just think so much of the practice of Buddhism dealing with non-duality and duality. And I really think that Steve Jobs, it has to have been a part of him that realized he wasn't going to die, even if he died. So why persist in this sense that, like, I've got this illness when I'm never, you know, I've got this illness and I need to have all this, all these other people, you know, interfere with me because I'm never going to die. You don't die. You just rematerialize. I love that. You know,
I love that. It reminds me of this presentation where behind him he had a projection saying the rumors about my death are highly exaggerated. So, but now you started talking about the opera, and I want to hear more about the opera. And we are both so immersed in it, right? I mean, we live it, we are studying it, you performed it, so you know it. But a lot of the people that are listening to this may not know it. So tell us a little bit about the opera. Mason Bates, a classically trained composer who is a DJ on the side, is bringing all those influences of techno and digital into it. Tell us about working on an opera like that musically.
Well, the number one thing people are going to wonder about is the microphones, is the amplification. And, you know, there's very well running an opera company. A lot of people are really concerned about amplification in the opera house. You know, the people that used to be deeply in love with candlelight, I'm sure we're really turned off when Edison's light bulb started lighting the front of stages, you know, all the ways in which little technologies have altered our art form over these many hundreds of years. But amplification's a big one. And I have to say, I love it. I love the cool thing about being an opera singer that many people miss, because we get thrilled by the fact that a human voice can carry over this 70 piece orchestra in a 3,000 seat house. The glory of having the full range of your vocal system is that the colors exist in the smallest dynamic and in the loudest. Amplification opens the window to colors in the human voice that you'd never hear in the opera house. And because we sacrifice a lot to move all that sound out. When I say sacrifice, I just mean nuance. So, like, you want the waves, but let's be honest, the technology in amplification now is like the iPhone. It's extraordinary compared to 10 years ago.
Right.
And so it's irresponsible of an art form like opera to not utilize the art forms that exist in the world that it currently resides in. Amplification, lighting, videography, I think 3D technologies coming up, you know, projections. These are technologies that are going to blow the minds of an opera audience. They're going to bring new people in, because with the combination of all the things that have made opera great and what's available now with technology, no one is going to be a stranger in the opera house, because we're all using advanced technologies and we're desperate for that communal experience of excellence, not only in acting and singing. So that's the number one thing. Amplification is taking care of one problem, which is if you want to bring techno DJ aesthetic into the opera house, the human voice unamplified can't compete. Everyone knows going into any club that they leave hoarse because human voices can't carry over that din.
Right.
So we've got to accept, it's not a matter of, I think on some level, all of us have to mature a little bit when it comes to holding fast to these traditions.
Right.
Because you don't want to loosen the grip and let it just run wild. You don't want to amplify Bohème, right? Unless you absolutely have to. But this one you do, you want it. And you especially want excellent people behind that board, because then you get every nuance. Mark Campbell's language is really written to be heard in that way. And you know, it serves the story too, because we're talking about advanced tech.
Exactly. Yeah. There is something so propulsive about the music that Mason wrote. I always talk about my daughter listening, my 5-year-old listening to it on the way when we drive, and she hears in the music, in the orchestral music that he wrote, all those stories of, you know, the rise and fall of Steve Jobs, that interlude. And she goes, oh, listen, now they're coming to hunt him. And there's a tornado here. And he feels really bad here. And I think there's something so full of life and full of pictures in the music that Mason wrote that is moving the story that Mark wrote even further. You've been in this business for almost two decades, mm-hmm. and you are a very smart man. You're observing everything. As you think about opera, a 400-year-old art form that has been lamented so frequently in the past as a dying art form. We've heard that crap so often. And it's always wrong, right? Because we're still here. Can we bring innovation to opera? Is it still possible to bring innovation to opera in a similar way that Steve Jobs innovated?
Yeah. We haven't even, I mean, in so many ways, Tomer, opera is not even to midlife. You know, when people say opera's dying, it's true. Everything's dying. I mean, if you take the Zen Buddhist look at it, it's all impermanent.
It's Stoic philosophy, right? I mean,
no doubt.
We're dying this moment.
Yes, and it's valuable to think that way because it moves the needle in terms of what you're willing to do to survive. It doesn't close anything down, it opens it up. And so I think that, you know, the things that are coming on board in tech are extraordinary. I think about the way that I think the subscription model, say Netflix, say to Substack, say to any of these ways in which old school, I think of it this way, and I'm not the only one. I'm sure I've gotten this from Ferris and all these other humans that I listen to, but this idea that, and certainly the person, Jaron Lanier, talked about this in You're Not a Gadget. He forewarned us that we're going to run into the age of everybody wanting to be subscribed to. That it's no longer, you're not subscribing to the New York Times, but you're going to be desperate for everyone to subscribe to you. It looks like we're headed in that direction very quickly. Influencing now is the precursor to people paying John $2 a month to be interesting, or to Tomer to be interesting. And that's going to, I mean, there was a guy just on Sam Harris's podcast who was talking about the fact that, you know, we're moving to an era when individuals are going to run quasi-governments potentially. And so when you think about art forms, well, I think about the patronage system that's so interesting because I do think there's going to be this sense, if you think of like venture capital, where it's just a moonshot for a lot of these cats, and they're like, they're serious. They're not taking moonshots without a lot of preparatory work. But, you know, the impetus to be excellent in different ways is just, there's just more pressure for it now. And it's not, you can't go get your law degree and just think you're going to have a 9-to-5 job and a happy life in a gated community anymore. You've got to be multifaceted. You got to be able to think on your feet. I love that we're in the art world because it just, there's so many doors open to us. I think with 3D sound, I think of the ability to put on to as a subscription model, right? If you want to just your traditional audience to come and listen to the live opera, fine, there'll be that. But there'll also be the opera where you can come and strap on a pair of goggles and you can decide which character you want to experience, right? You've seen Giovanni 100 times, you know what the story is, but you want to see it from the point of view of John Moore playing Giovanni. You know, you want to see what it's like to look, to be on stage with, you know, Giovanni when he's pulled into hell. Right? Not just merely observing it, but a part of the action. Now, right now, it's really clumsy. It's sort of Atari technology. Right. But it won't it's be long. It won't be long. It's not going to be long. And you know precisely what I'm up to here. There are enterprising individuals that we know of and we don't know of that are already working on this. And the question is, are you going to be someone that's like, no, because I received a certain way of looking at the world and the way of being an artist and the way of being an entrepreneur. I liked that way. It worked for my parents. It's going to work for me. Or are you going to be the person that just has your arms open going, I'm ready. Help me understand this. Help me be a part of this. And so when people, yes, opera is dying. Accept it. So are you. So am I. You know, democracy as we received it in 1776 is dying, right? All of the ways in which everything is not, you can say dying or you can say adapting, We're still here as a human species. How many cataclysms have there been? Just organic life. How many cataclysms has organic life faced and persisted? And so culture is this wonderful agent because it's always shifting. And we have this repository of history to borrow from in real time to inform our future mind. That's not dying.
It's only renewed. Yes. It's only renewed every day. And that's my point, because I just to set the record here, I don't believe opera is dying. I just believe that, on the contrary, it's renewed all the time. And we're in a period of great renaissance, and I'm excited about it. And then you have the business side. So I have my own gurus when it comes to business. My Harvard Business School professor, Michael Tushman, Andy Binns, who works with him as a consultant, Joshua Margolis, another professor from Harvard, Charles O'Reilly from Stanford, and how they think about innovation and this simple idea that the world cannot keep changing without you adapting. Like, if you're just trying to do what you've done before, you'll be stuck, you'll be left behind. Yeah. And the only way to move forward is to cannibalize from yourself instead of somebody else eating you.
Oh, thank you. That was beautifully said. Yeah. It's amazing to think about. The thing, Tomer, that a show like this really brings on board for me, and I know you have this experience there. You and I are having this podcast. When we get together and have the rehearsals and the performances, the people that are going to be seen are you and me at the end of the show taking a bow. The rest of the cast members, the creative team will come out first night, that kind of thing. There's a whole bunch of people behind the scenes that make the ship run. And your task is not only to, as the front facing, representative of the whole company in many aspects, and certainly as the performer, that front facing performer saying, we did the thing, but there's all those people in the pit that aren't going to be seen. There's all those people backstage. There's that whole organization at Atlanta Opera. Then there's the board. There's all of those patrons that do a whole lot of work that no one ever knows about, that they're not just given money. Tell me what your experience has been in selling new opera, selling, rebooted ideas about old operas. What you just did during the pandemic was extraordinary. How do you get people on board?
Well, first of all, you're right. I mean, there's hundreds of people, this cliche of it takes a village, from the people that organize the schedule for us to be meeting to the folks that are recording this right now, Liam and Aaron, who are going to edit it, and our marketing folks that are going to put it on the platforms. And I feel like it all starts with why, right? There's that famous book, It All Starts With Why. And people like to be paid. It's important that they get paid and paid well, but they also need to follow and believe in something. And that's why people show up, is because they want to be a part of something they believe in. And every day, I hope we make another step toward that. We're not perfect, but we're working towards something that we want people to believe in. And the vision of the company, and I don't count COVID, because COVID just kind of threw everything. So, we had to perform in a circus tent. Cool. I don't know if the future of opera is in circus tents. Maybe. Yeah. But I think the basic premise is, like, this is the most amazing art form that I know. And I've looked at all the art forms and have practiced all of them. But there's something about opera that is a combination of everything, from music to voice to design to sound to wigs and makeup to lighting to storytelling. You know it. I don't need to explain to you. How do we take this amazing art form and are able to tell different stories that matter, not just focusing on the classics, but supplementing the classics that we need to keep alive, the Onieggis and the Giovannis and the Barber of Seville's, but supplementing them with stories that matter, like Steve Jobs, like Silent Night, like Dead Men Walking. And there's a whole list of them. And then where do we do them? And how do we connect to the society? How do we connect to the city, the community that we're in? There's a danger right now that we are programming and that we're doing things for a virtual audience because everything is connected, everything is online. So we get likes from Thailand and New York, and that's nice.
Feels right? good.
Or bad, or, you know, we can be criticized or we can be idolized. But the bottom line is we are Atlanta Opera. How do we connect to this community? How do we keep on the real mission, which is putting on the most amazing experiences of opera, different stories in the most fresh way, in the most authentic way to our community?
Yep.
Not to the New York Times. Like, it's nice to be picked up by the New York Times, but I'm not programming season for them. I'm programming seasons for Atlanta.
And I love that you say that because the community, opera is about that. All of the art traditions that we have are about coming to terms with what it is to live in communion with each other. And I guess that's why I ask you that question about the team, because, and I love that you brought up, you know, the virtual thing, because there's a team required there. But the most moving thing, and this happened with Steve Jobs several times, because it was a new opera, coming off stage in those 7 performances, and certainly leading up to, but definitely during the performances, there's something about that crowd, you know, a paying audience, all the energy that comes with performance. When you come off and a crew member who you'd never talked to was like, I never thought of Steve Jobs that way. Or you come off stage and your stage manager's crying and she's heard the thing 5 or 6, you know, 100 times in the rehearsal hall, but that experience managing, you know, it's like everyone gets better at their job every time you do it. That's why you rehearse. You're never finished with the job. And these new operas, and certainly, again, why is opera not dying? Because just like sort of opera is in the same position now that, you know, so much of industry was when the internet came on board. Because now every single story is a potential opera. There's so much. I mean, we just underestimate that. At a certain point, people are going to be thinking about their private communications in a less sort of, they're not going to be so clingy about, you know, the cat coming out of the bag about their affairs in the same way that they've traditionally been, because so many of the taboos that are wrapped up in, you know, affairs, and I'm not saying like relationship affairs necessarily, but business affairs, you know, I always like to say to people, Netflix is exposing just how bland and tropic all of storytelling is. You know, you really have to be good at storytelling to draw an audience in. I mean, I think of the difference between, say, you know, sort of the niche, you know, which are not bad shows, but I don't know, like Roseanne compared to, you know, Black Mirror or Breaking Bad. I mean, there's no competition. Like when you think of like what it took to draw out a series like Breaking Bad over 8 seasons and develop those characters in that way, that's operatic, right? And like opera has this dustbin of history. Most of the operas that have ever been written, we don't even know about, right? There's so few get through, but there was also sort of a limit on to some level, because there was, you know, for a large period of opera's life, there were censors in a way that you couldn't. I mean, Mozart and De Ponte were skating on thin ice, right? And now the ice is actually getting quite thick. There's a lot more that we can do and say. I mean, yes, you have to be somewhat careful depending on the current atmosphere, and we should be. We should be conscious of it. But the ice is not getting thinner; it's getting thicker, and there's more as we get used to. Some of this personal subject matter getting less and less taboo, people with creative minds and brilliant musical skills and technical skills and design skills, they are going to be unleashed. The tidal wave it's a renaissance. The tidal wave of creativity is not even here yet. The earthquake, let's say it's Black Lives Matter or the Me Too movement. That was the earthquake, 100 miles offshore. The tidal wave hasn't even gotten here yet.
Yeah.
And when it does, those of us that are lucky to be mid-career, we can make a choice. We can boohoo the change, or we can ride that wave.
Let's ride that wave, baby.
Let's ride it, Tomer. And that's why I'm so grateful for you. I'm grateful for, you know, Mason and Mark. And I, you know, I mentioned Missy and Royce and, you know, Ellen Reed and, you know, the stuff that they're doing all over the country, you know,
Kevin Brooks and David Till Little and Jake Hagee.
Yeah. I mean, East Coast, West Coast, North and South, Europe, you know, Asia, everywhere. I was just in New Zealand. They are really working hard to tell good news stories, and it's happening everywhere. And we're fortunate to be in a position where with an open mind and an open heart, we can be open, like Steve Jobs, right? The circle. That's what it is. You know, we've got to understand that this is a cycle. This is the wheel of the Dharma in motion. And we have writing that is so, it's such a privilege to be a part of that storytelling.
I love it. I love it. I can't wait to be in the rehearsal room with you and get a couple of drinks in Texas and then in Atlanta. And thank you so much for one of my favorite conversations in the past few months. Yeah. I appreciate
it. Yeah, thank you for making it possible, Tomer, and everything you're doing. You're doing the right stuff. Thank you.